Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
I am bringing the Night Pants Nation tour to Minneapolis, April 28th through the 30th, June 4th, Los Angeles at the world-famous Troubadour, June 24th, Des Moines, Iowa, one night only, and June 25th, Omaha, Nebraska, one night only. Get your tickets now at RyanSickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pants Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. I want to say thank you, as I do every week, for all your support. This podcast continues to grow and grow. For the last 4 months, our audio downloads alone have been over a million. So thank you. The YouTube numbers are climbing. Please subscribe. It's a free thing to do to help the show out, and it really does help the show out. So if you got to have more Honeydew, man, check out the Patreon. It's called The Honeydew with Y'all. It's $5 a month. If you're in for a year, you're getting over a month free, and you're getting The Honeydew a day early ad free at no additional cost, all right? We've got some of the wildest stories, I promise you, in comedy that you've ever fucking heard. For $5, it'll blow your goddamn mind, all right? Come out, see me on tour. All tickets to all shows are available at RyanSickler.com, all right? Now, you guys know what we do over here. We highlight the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind storytellers. I'm very excited to have today's guest back on the Honeydew, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Greg Fitzsimmons. Welcome back to the Honeydew, Greg.
Ryan, to be asked back is always really the pressure, because the first time in, you got that excitement, you're a newbie. It's like being a virgin.
Yeah.
You know, being a virgin that first time, you know, it's really special. Feels, but the like second the first time, Foreigner, yep. Double Vision album.
Probably going to get demonetized right out of the gate.
Oh, shit.
They demonetize a lot of mine anyway.
Yeah, mine do too. I get fucked. I had this thing where I do a podcast called The Sunday Papers, and we do our fans. We've been doing it for 2 years. Every single week, one of our fans writes and produces and records a theme song for us that's different.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we do it every week. And then some guy took the songs he did for us and he copyrighted them. And so every one of those episodes, he got paid for.
No.
Because that's what YouTube does. If you use somebody else's music, all the revenue that you made from your YouTube clicks goes to them. So we stopped doing the songs.
Motherfucker.
I know.
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we get into what we're going to talk about today, plug, promote, everything and anything you'd like. Ready?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming back, dude.
Fitzdog Radio is my other podcast, and then Sunday Papers comes out on Sunday, and then Childish comes out on Wednesday, and then I got tour dates coming up. La Jolla, Comedy Store La Jolla, Spokane Comedy Club in April, then we got New Orleans and Lafayette, Louisiana, then we got Plainville, Massachusetts at some casino, Denver Comedy Works at the end of April, and then we got Irvine, Tacoma.
Damn.
Yeah, it's crazy. Bakersfield. It's all at fitzdog.com, fitzdog.com.
I was just saying out loud, so I'm gonna try to make this happen. I would love to perform in New Orleans. Where do you perform when you're there?
It's my first time. It's this place called the Howlin' Wolf. I think it's a rock club that they're doing comedy at. So I'm flying in going in a day early because I haven't spent much time in New Orleans.
That's such a great city.
And I'm going to do that. And then I think a bunch of my friends are going to fly down with me. And then we're going to drive to Lafayette, Louisiana, which is like in the middle of...
Yeah.
You know, have you been there?
No. Yeah. I just know it's in the middle of fucking nowhere. Middle I've driven nowhere. Through because I've driven from Maryland to New Orleans and back. So I've been
through
the bumfuck. Yeah.
Wow.
All through Mississippi, through Louisiana.
Yeah.
Let me know how it is. I really want to go. I have no idea how I would sell there or anything, but I just want to get down to New Orleans and tell some jokes.
Oh, hell yeah. There's no comedy clubs in New Orleans.
Yeah, there's not a comedy club.
There never has been. I mean,
is that right?
For like a minute here and there, comedy clubs have popped up, but there's never been a substantial run of a comedy club in New Orleans. So weird. I mean, it's kind of like Chicago was like that for a long time. There was no good stand-up. And now you know, Zany's was always there, but like,
but it was
a small
improv
club.
City then, more than stand-up.
Yeah,
isn't
it was all
wild?
Improv
isn't
and
that
sketch.
Crazy? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few cities that are big that never had a big stand-up presence. But what do you think of LA versus New York comedy?
Well, as far as stand-ups, I think New York owns L.A., but as far as podcasting, I think L.A. owns New York.
There you go. Yeah, I'll go with that.
I would say that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunity to get on stage in New York is, there's so many more chances. And, you know, if you really utilize it, then you can see why those guys are strong and good and funny.
And it makes you funnier because when you're watching Attell and Sam Morril and Colin Quinn and... You know, and then the big names that come down. It's just not even the big names. It's the guys that are grinding it out. Joe List and Mark Norman.
Shane Gillis, all those guys.
Shane,
Mark Norman, Chris DeStefano.
Shane fucking kills.
Big J, Dan Soder, those guys. Yeah, so you better step up your fucking game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think there's that run of L.A. comics out here, I would say, that are getting up as much as they are. What do we have out here? Unless you're on a fucking... Mike Circuit, you got Supernova.
Yeah.
You got Laugh Factory. Mm. Even the Ice House is still closed.
Yeah.
You got the Improv and you got the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And even they're not seven nights
a
week. Right. We're still behind the whole, you know, you travel. This place is like a fucking goddamn time warp back here.
Well, what I do, because I'm usually gone on the weekends on the road, so I usually do spots in town like on Wednesday, Thursday night. So that way, since I'm only doing a couple nights a week and I live in Venice, I'll try to go out and do three spots. I'll try to do all the clubs in one night.
And West Side Comedy is a great. I want to give them love. They're great.
Yeah.
Those Chris Gorbos and those guys are
great club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into some of your trauma because I want to hear about
Jesus. I mean, what a show.
I know.
What
I
a show.
It. And I love your laundry list.
Come on and tell us the worst parts of your life.
Yeah. I'm watching everybody's Instagram and I'm tired of seeing your best pictures.
Yeah.
Tell me about the BU softball worlds. Oh, you know what? I'm an idiot. Okay. I am a fucking moron. It's softball. The whole time I was like, what?
No, not only was it softball, but at BU, because it was a city school, the Eagles,
Boston?
No, that's Boston College.
Terriers. The Terriers.
But it was a D1 school, but the softball fields were so small that we played with a 14-ounce ball. It was fucking huge because the fences weren't as far out.
Is that right?
So it would have been a home run derby if they used regular-sized softballs. So anyway, so I grew up not a great athlete. I love sports. I would play any sport. I had a brother who was 13 months older than me, so Irish twins competing, playing. And but I was just never, I lacked the confidence to be a really great athlete. And I was fucking tiny. I was skinny as hell. I looked like I looked like Karen Carpenter growing up. And I was just as emotional. And I was just as emotional as Karen Carpenter.
You could see it from the outside.
I wore flared denim and paisley shirts. My father coached me in baseball, and my father was a 6'3" guy from the Bronx, and he was a fucking tough guy, and he coached like a tough guy.
Was he harder on you because you were his son?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He used to bench me. He used to put me. Oh, my God. And then I lost my mitt, and so he made me play with the catcher's mitt. We had an extra catcher's mitt, and I was playing third base with a fucking catcher's mitt. And But like he was like a cigarette dangling out of his mouth, and he had a few drinks in him.
Never coach like that today. Our coach had a cigarette hanging in his mouth while he leaned over your shoulder and showed you how to bat. Shit, it'd be burning your eyes. Like, God damn.
Then coach. You're like, do you have an erection? This is a weird coaching stance
behind every kid. Yep, they're talking like smoking. Yeah. Like, oh man, shit.
But that's why Bad News Bears was so great. The Walter Matthau was the. With the cooler full of beers at every practice.
The movie, it's 100% perfect. I tell Segor about this all the time. Like, we in life, the comedians, we're the Bad News Bears. We're not supposed to win.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to win. It's supposed to be right there.
Right.
And it ain't happening. Right, That's who we are. We're the Bad News fucking Bears. Yeah, but don't worry. We're coming back next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. That's a great movie.
It's a great movie. And Jesus Christ, the language that those kids were using.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yeah, you can never do anything like that
now. The trailer of the movie used the N-word.
The trailer did?
The trailer.
I remember
that. When it first came out.
I remember all the language in it and the beer drinking and
Tatum O'Neill goes, all we got on this team is a bunch of, and then she lists every bad racial epithet you could say.
Yeah.
Which I don't say.
Yeah. Go watch the original.
Yeah. So he coached me and I was a nervous player, and that's no way to play baseball. The worst thing about baseball is you're just hanging out. You're on a field. You're relaxed. There's butterflies. It's spring. Your mind wanders, and then in a millisecond, you have to be a superb athlete. You have to snap into action.
Shit's coming right fucking at you.
Right, then turn around and throw it. It's just, I hated baseball. I was so glad my son didn't want to play baseball and took up ballet instead. He gets a lot of pussy. No, he didn't take up ballet. I should have. He would thank me when he was older if I pushed him into ballet.
Damn right he would. He'd be like, thank you, Dad.
So anyway, cut to college. And now I love intramural sports in college because it's all the kids that couldn't make real teams. So the bar has been lowered on him. Not as bad as I was before. And so I'm on this team and all my friends in college, I don't know why, but like this was my senior year. I had four roommates. One was the captain of the lacrosse team. One was captain of the tennis team. One was captain of the rugby team. And then the other guy was also on lacrosse. And then me. And I was doing stand-up comedy at this point, which is why I think they liked me and I got to be with the cool kids. So we had an intramural softball team and they were fucking good. And so they put me at catcher because in softball, the catcher does almost nothing.
Okay, so let me ask you this. This bigger ball, do you have a different glove or is it still fit into a regular glove?
Same glove.
It is. Yeah. Okay. Except, it harder though? Like the web in that? It's a bigger ball, you said?
Yeah, you need a decent size because, you know, there's infielder gloves and outfielder gloves.
Yeah.
So you need a outfielder glove. Those are the bigger ones.
Yeah.
And so my glove, because I didn't have one, is I brought my father's baseball mitt to college. And it was kind of like sentimental. It made me think about my dad and it was big, but it was fucking old. It was like an old dried out mitt. And so, but I'm playing catcher, so it doesn't really matter. And so we make it through the playoffs. There's 113 teams in the league.
Damn.
It's BU. There's 30,000 kids.
Yeah. That's a lot. I didn't
113 teams.
That's a lot.
We make it to the World Series. We're in the finals.
How many games? Do you remember how you had to play to get through that?
It was like, it was gotta be, right? It was like two games a week for, you know, the whole.
Yeah.
What is it? A fall game or spring? A spring game.
Spring.
Yeah. So we make it to the World Series and we're playing great. You know, John Matarazzo, who's on varsity hockey, is a righty, but he can hit opposite field, but he doesn't show it. He doesn't show it. He hits him down the left side until he gets some guys on base, and then he goes opposite field. So he hits him hard left. They shift the outfield. He goes right down the right field line. I mean, these guys are amazing. And so then...
What's your team name? Do you remember?
I don't remember. No. And then... So anyway, we are tied. Bottom of the ninth. They're up. They got a man on second. Guy gets up. Line drives to center field. Guy from second rounds third. Bill Mountford's in center field, gets the ball, throws a fucking rope. Rope. I'm hoping it bounces before it gets to me, but no, it's coming hot. Straight in. And I got my feet planted. I'm in front of the plate. I'm ready to take the hit. And the ball comes in. And I got him. This guy's about two-thirds of the way towards me, and the ball is right there. I got him. We're going overtime. Third, two outs. Ball comes in, hits my father's dried-out old mitt, and the seam pops.
No.
And the fingers open.
No.
And the ball goes right through.
No.
And the guy scores, and they win the World Series.
That's how they won.
That's how they won. And these guys had no mercy. It wasn't like, hey, Fitzy, you fucked up. It was like, hey, Fitzy, you fucked up. They were mad. These were real athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to buy beers all night for everybody. And I just stood there, and I literally did have tears in my eyes because it brought back so many fucking memories of not being good enough for my father, and here it is, his mitt.
Glove. Oh, man, that is brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah, I had so much insecurity about sports, too, because I really, when you're a boy, so much of how you define yourself is, I guess it depends on the boy, but for me, it was so much about sports, because my dad was kind of athletic, and, you know, I just,
My daughter's in softball now, and she's like, I hate batting. I go, I know. You feel like everyone's watching you. And she's like, yeah. And I go, look, also, I don't know what the fuck league we got her ass in, but the kids are pitching.
Yeah.
All right. And they're way too young to be pitching. We used to pitch.
How old are they?
They're seven.
Yeah.
We used to pitch in our little league. Kids are throwing it over the backstop. Yeah, it's taking forever. Right. So they do this thing where it's four pitches, and then the coach comes out.
Perfect.
So I told her, I go, don't swing. Do not swing. There's none of these kids are throwing strikes. Just stand there. I go, if one's
great
close,
listen for your kid. Little lesson. Don't play.
But no. I teach her to have a good eye. I go, if that thing's near, you hit it. But if not, if that thing's over your head or in the dirt, like she didn't even know. I go, you don't. She thought I had to swing no matter what and try to hit that thing no matter. I'm like, no. You got to try to hit it if it's right in this strike zone.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then wait for the coach to come out. And she has not got a hit yet. She keeps fouling them hard left. I'm like, oh, you're early. She keeps she's so close.
Yeah.
But I get it. She's like, oh, I don't like that feeling. I know it's all. I remember feeling like that. My dad would yell too and be like.
Did he ever coach you?
Yeah, he would coach and help out and shit too. And he was always harder on us too.
Mm-hmm.
But he would tell us that later. He's like, I'm harder on you because you're my kid and because I also have seen you do better. Yeah. I know you can do better. Like some of those kids can't do better.
Yeah. My dad gave up on me. He like, and then I played hockey.
Like
and,
his glove did.
Yeah. And like his condom did because I was an accidental birth.
Wait, really? Just full of quit. Just full of quit.
But that he gave hilarious. Up on me. Like I played high school ice hockey. And
you did?
I did. But here's how bad I was. I was good enough to make the team every year. I was on JV freshman year, JV sophomore year, JV junior year. And then I think this is against the rules. I was on JV as a senior.
Were you really?
I was the captain of the JV team when I was a senior. But I was funny. That's why they kept me on. That's why the coach liked me. Because like I used to give like, we had these morning meetings 2 days a week in front of the whole school in the auditorium. And I would get up and I would do, remember when Joe Piscopo used to do the sports report on SNL on Weekend Update? I used to do it like that. And I would do these really funny reviews of the games. And so I cracked everybody up. And then, you know, and then I would... Before games, we would all drink. We had if we had Friday games, we would get out of school and then we'd go drink and then we'd play. It was fun. We just fucked around. Never came to my dad. Never came to a game.
Never came?
Oh, no. He came to one game.
Which one?
It was the one where I went to check a kid because the kid was up against the glass and my dad was standing right there. And I'm like, I'm going to line this motherfucker up. My dad's going to see the pain. He's going to see blood splatter on that glass and he's going to accept me for the athlete that I am. So I go charging at the kid and then he deeks me out and I go flying into the glass.
Right in your dad's face.
And he can see the look in my eyes. Sorry, Dad. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fucking great. That is just brutal.
Oh, my God. The shame. And then my kid turns out to be a fucking star athlete.
Really? What sports?
Soccer. He started soccer. Yeah. Well, first he did Taekwondo as a kid, mm-hmm. and he got his black belt when he was about 13 years old. And then he started playing soccer when he was probably about maybe 9. And this kid played club soccer and school soccer. So he was playing soccer 6 days a week for 10 years. And through high school, he was the captain of his club team. His senior year, he was captain of his high school team and his club team.
Damn.
Both teams went undefeated.
Wow, undefeated.
And he was a star. And he could have played D1 soccer. But he thought about it. He had people looking at him, and he was like, "Nah, I want to have a life in college." And I was like, "Well, I don't know where you got it. I don't know where you got the talent from."
That's badass.
Yeah.
What position?
Midfielder.
Man, see, those guys were.
Yeah.
I played soccer my whole life too. I was.
Did you really?
I was good. I was all JUCO. That's why I was joking about all JUCO. I was all JUCO in community college.
What's JUCO?
Junior college. That's all. Oh. You know. You see it mostly with football, but these JUCO guys are the guys that like went to a D1 school. They got in some kind of fucking trouble.
Yeah.
They go to a junior college to rebuild their character and themselves and their stats. And then they go back to a different D1 school and then into the NFL usually.
Yeah.
But I was all JUCO in college. And then I played for the U.S. when I was 16. My brother and I both went out for this. It was like a U.S. development team. And we made that, and I went and played soccer in Europe so most kids, they backpack and do all that bullshit.
Yeah.
I still got my month in Europe, but I went playing soccer.
Nice.
We made a team. It was an under 17, teams USA, like Olympic development squad or some bullshit. I mean, I knew we weren't going anywhere after that.
Yeah.
But
that's
that was
amazing.
A lot of fun. It was fun.
You must have had a good hard ass.
Bro, let me tell you something. I had a good tight ass.
You did.
We went over there. And we were so cocky and arrogant, just such 16-year-old dicks.
Yeah.
And we go right down the field. I'll never forget. And we scored like that. And we were like, "Well, we are gonna run this fucking country."
Yeah.
Greg Fitzsimmons, we didn't win a game. We didn't win. We were there for a month. Listen to me. We played 2-3 times a day. We didn't win a fucking game.
Yeah.
We got our asses
It's
kicked.
A different sport over there.
What I loved about it was the physicality, though. That's the way I wanted to play here. They allow you to play rougher over there.
Yeah.
But, man, are they so much more advanced. A friend of mine, Sam, he said he was talking to an English buddy of his, and he said the reason that he coaches soccer, and the reason he thinks a lot of Americans suck at soccer is because we force our kids right into competition. It's like my daughter, she shouldn't be playing softball right now. She should be learning skills. So he said that's what they do over there. It's a couple of years of skills and rules and things, and then they intermix games and fun shit in there. They don't go into competition and recording stats and who wins and loses until later.
No kidding.
And that's what he believes separates the rest of the world from us, is that we're – get in there and my daughter, the guy's like, "The play's at second." I go, "Do you know what that means?" She goes, "No, I don't know what the play's at second means." I go, "Why would you? It's a foreign language to you."
Right.
You know,
dude,
like,
King Richard. You see that movie, King Richard?
I haven't watched it yet.
It's all about he keeps the daughters out of the juniors. You know, every other, no pro tennis player had ever made it before without having gone through the junior system.
Is that right?
And he said, "Fuck that. I want them to have a childhood. I want them to study. I want them to learn 3 languages." And they're not going to. And so he had the best coach in the country took the Williams girls when they were about 13 to Florida in a training camp. And then they got there and he's like, "Okay, we got tournaments coming up." And the father was like, "They're not going to play any matches till they're 16 or something, 17. So for 3 years, just skills.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Wow, so you were good. And did you meet any girls in Europe, or it was just all?
Yeah, met a couple girls.
Really?
I am back. Listen, this is 89, so man, my father was pissed when I was calling this girl from Holland. Man.
Yeah.
He was like, what the hell? Yeah, that's a $40 phone bill. Right.
Then you show a picture of her, and he's like, all right, get on the blower.
Yeah, she was a cute little blonde. And then I met a girl from New Jersey named Vanessa, and we kept in touch for a while. She and her friend would come down. They were Jersey. We were Maryland, so it wasn't that far.
Yeah.
We'd all hang out. But, man, it was a fucking – we went to Holland, Germany, England. We didn't go to London. We went to England, Belgium, Scotland – and there was one more country we went to. Did I say Denmark?
Damn.
I don't know.
You went to Denmark?
Yeah, we went over there.
Yeah.
And a kid on the team stole the fucking country's flag.
No shit.
We were like, are you fucking nuts?
Whoa.
We're like, imagine right now if we were in the U.S. and somebody fucking stole an American flag off a store.
Yeah.
I was like, he folded up and set it over somewhere. We ran away. I was like, fuck you. I had never shoplifted in my life. Yeah. I still have never shoplifted in my life except the last week. In Europe when we were all out of money.
Uh-huh.
We were fucking dining and ditching everywhere. Yeah. Just hauling
ass.
Really? Oh, right through the games. We would run right in through the middle of the fucking games to get away. It was bad. It got bad.
Yeah, we shoplifted like maniacs when I was a kid. That's all we did.
Is your dad still alive?
No, he died when he was 52.
52? That's young.
Yeah,
what happened?
He was young. Heart attack. At Rayo's in Harlem, you know that restaurant?
And I love their sauce.
Yeah, their sauce is great.
Yeah.
So it's a mob joint. And I think we talked about, last time I was on the podcast, we talked about my dad dying. But yeah, so it's weird because now I'm 55 and I've gone past, I am older now than my father ever was.
That blow your mind?
It blows my mind.
I say those exact words. My dad died when he was 42. I'm 49 now. And it blows my mind every day that I get up. And also, I still think like, man, I feel young, but 42 was 7 years ago. I felt even younger then. Like, man, well, that's an early fucking time to go.
You probably look better now than your dad did at 42, right?
Yeah.
Guys aged more fast back then.
Yeah. He definitely looked older, I feel like, than 42.
Yeah. How'd he die?
But I had gray hair. He didn't. He had brown hair. Well, it's interesting. So originally it was ruled a heart attack, but then— right when I turned 42, this is fucking so crazy. Right when I turned 42, I started having these crazy, like, health problems. I had just had kidney stones.
Oof.
And both of my legs clotted. So I think it's the kidney stones or whatever, and they can't figure it out for like 6 months. I'm going through all these tests and everything, and at the end of it, they find out I have this blood disease called factor V Leiden, where I'm prone to clotting, okay? So they're like, you need to get genetic testing
done. You can die from blood clots.
Oh, yeah. It was bad. They could not figure it out, and they would keep flushing me and shit. So they're like, you have to get genetic testing done because if one parent has it, it's not as bad as if both parents have it. So the thing is, I'm never going to know if my dad had it if my mom has it.
Okay.
Right? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know how bad I'm going to have it. So I got to call my brothers and everybody. They all go get tested. None of them have it. My mom, my two brothers. So my dad had it. And all these years later, the doctors tell me now, like, they also said anytime in the 80s, someone died young, they just called it a heart attack. And now, you know, 30 years fucking of technology and everything, they're realizing that a lot of these people actually died of, why can't I think of it now? Fucking clots.
Yeah.
And he did have a little blood on his lip and there was a little on his toe. So they don't know if he bit his lip when he died or tongue or if he actually had a clot. So I ended up having a clot. I fucking get through it, thank God. And I find out I have this. So now I just, it's nothing you could, like, diet doesn't really help it or anything. It's a genetic thing. And I got to wear compression pants on planes and shit. And I got to get up every, like, I can feel my legs if I sit longer than 90 minutes. When I get up,
know,
I feel it.
And I hate to be like a backseat doctor, but like, have you tried gay conversion therapy?
Gay conversion therapy? I mean, what the fuck are you talking about?
Just might be good for you. I don't know.
For my fucking blood clots.
Well, like, you know, when they came up with, you know, boner pills, they were originally meant for something else, and it turned out it helped with that. So just give it a shot.
I once read it was for, what was it? I think it was like cholesterol
or something?
Heart, blood pressure,
Shit. Right.
And I think women had it too. And they some study I read where like the women gave it back and the guys did not. And they were like, what's going on there? I guess it's making my fucking dick hard. That's what's going on.
Dude, I do an ad for Blue Chew, which is the boner pills. And my friend's gay and he goes, he listens to the podcast. He goes, hey, do they give you free samples for the Blue Chew? And I was like, yeah, they send me like cases of so much of it. He goes, can I get some? I go, wait, let me get it. So you're gay and you need boner pills? I go, you ever think maybe you're not gay? Maybe you just like nice haircuts and show tunes? Like if it's not getting hard, maybe you're not gay. He's like, I'm fucking gay.
I'll show you how gay I am.
I'm just drunk most of the time. He sends me these videos. He goes out on Sunday nights because Sunday nights is like the real gay party night. And he'll send me these videos of like these bars and he walks in and like middle-aged guys with like bellies are hanging from leather harnesses face down and guys just come by and like slap their asses and stick stuff in their mouth. And he's, you're not supposed to be filming that shit, but he's always like discreetly shooting like the darkest shit that happens.
Man, I went to Hollywood, the wild place. When I first moved here, I dated this girl from Argentina. I mean, this chick was... just, you know, they say whatever. She was definitely out of my league.
Yeah.
Like I was like, this girl doesn't know. She has no idea. And I mean, just a bombshell.
Yeah.
And she was fucking, she spoke Spanish, you know, just everybody at work was like, there's no way she likes you. I was like,
yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
All right.
So one night she's like, you want to take ecstasy? I'd never taken ecstasy. And she's like, and we're going to rent a limo and we're going to go out. And I was like, okay. So we take ecstasy, and she takes me to this place on Santa Monica Boulevard. It was one of those, it was a club, depending on the night. It was a building, basically. A Monday night, it was this, and Tuesday night. But Saturday night, it was a place called Cinematic, S-I-N-A-matic. And in the front of the club was just clubby dance, whatever. And she's holding my hand, and we're just fucking zooming. And she's just walking me through this club full of just Hollywood freaks dancing, leather, fishnet, all this shit. We go to the back where there's a door. We go in, shut the
door.
And it's a fucking maybe 20-person live S&M show.
Nice.
And I was just like, and she's like, do you like what you see? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And that was the night before Father's Day. And I would like to look at the camera now and apologize to her dad for all the shit I did to his daughter the night before Father's Day. I tell you, she didn't sleep. I promise you that. She did not sleep.
Well, so it was interactive.
Yeah, you could. You didn't have to.
But you did.
I did not go up with, no. She and I went home after that.
Oh, you got inspired by it, and then you went home and you spanked her a little bit.
But it was interactive. If you wanted to come up and respectfully do, like, there was a girl up there with her nipples clamped, and you could go up and put shit on people's bodies, or, you know, they would have shit, like, suspended from their, like, little weights and shit suspended from their nipples, and they're fucking whipping each other. You could go up and whip somebody. Yeah, and she wore that night was a fishnet outfit with pasties over her titties and a G-string.
Really?
That was her outfit, yeah. I was like, where are we going?
And what were you wearing?
Fucking jeans and like a T-shirt or something, a hoodie, what I always wear. Same shit. And everybody just looking. It's funny because when you're with a woman like that or a guy like that and they're so good looking, you know everyone's going to look.
Yeah.
You know? But it wasn't just her getting the looks. I was the secondary looks I was getting like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you? Yeah,
I was like, tonight it is.
Yeah, and all they're thinking is this guy's packing. He's got something going on we don't know about.
I did. I had something going on.
Yeah.
When you push your body too hard or you just feel run down, it's extremely important to stay hydrated. Making hydration a priority helps us feel better on a day-to-day basis. All right, Liquid IV. It's the best, guys. I take it every day. Even if I'm feeling run down, I throw a Liquid IV in some water and boom, off you go. It's just a simple little pouch. You shake it up, boom, drop it in. I promise you, you're good to go. Hydration's everything, all right? And one stick of liquid IV hydration multiplier and 16 ounces of water, it hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. It contains 5 essential vitamins. It's got B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C. 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, and it's made with premium ingredients, non-GMO, and free from gluten, dairy, and soy, all right? Grab Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code HONEYDEW at checkout. That's 25% off of anything you order there, okay? When you use the promo code HONEYDEW at liquidiv.com, experience better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code HONEYDEW. Saying goodbye to high-interest credit card debt is one of the first steps towards financial independence, but the interest month after month can feel like you're in a never-ending hamster wheel, and that's where Upstart comes in. Upstart-powered personal loans can help you pay down high-interest debt all online with simple and easy-to-understand payment terms. Upstart has helped over 1.8 million customers on their path to financial freedom, and a ton of you off of this show, all right? So whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high-interest debt, or funding personal expenses, Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date. Upstart knows you're more than just your credit score, so rather than looking at your credit score alone, Upstart's model considers other factors like your income, your employment, and other information provided in your loan application to find you a smarter rate for your loan. And you can check your rate in minutes for loans between $1,000 to $50,000 without impacting your credit score. You can even receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Don't wait and check your rate today at upstart.com/honeydew. That's upstart.com/honeydew to check your rate today. And don't forget to use my URL to let them know I sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dude. I want to hear about this assault.
All right, back to BU. I went to college. And after, I didn't apply to BU. I was in Europe. I took a year off after high school. I worked 2 jobs for like 6 months, and then I went to Europe for 6 months with a backpack on. I saved $3,000, and
was
it lasted
enough?
Me 6 months.
It did.
Well, it was like 1985, you know.
But you actually were good about it. You didn't blow it.
Well, I bought a one-month Eurail pass, and then some French guy showed me how to forge it to change it to a 6-month
okay,
Eurail pass.
All right.
So buses and trains were free.
Yeah.
I was staying in youth hostels where it was usually like $10 a night. And then once you're at the youth hostel, people tell you, you know, you get the Swiss guy that goes, hey, man, you can get falafels at this place down on L Street. They're $2. And, you know, and then people share food. And it's just like you're living cheap, which is the best way to travel.
Yeah.
Because you get to know people and you count on people and you kind of like, you know, and just hooking up, like having sex with, I mean, just girls, like you said, way out of my league.
Hooked up at the hostels and stuff.
Hooked up at the hostels all the time. I went to the one in Barcelona. I walk in and I open the door for the showers, and I walk in and I see 3 naked chicks, and I close the door, I walk out, and then as I'm walking away, this girl opens the door and she goes, no, it is how you say co-educational. And I'm like, no, it's not. And I'm walking and there's like, you know, fucking Danish girls and like African girls, and everybody's just embracing it, and everybody's naked, and it wasn't like stalls. It was like a Holocaust shower. It was a wide open room with just spigots and people fucking drying their asses. And oh my God,
I just want you to know, you just ruined that motherfucking fantasy for me. I saw the steam parting ways, and I saw the corners of women over here. And
there's nothing sexy about that. Yeah, there's nothing sexy about that. That's the least sexy shower scene in history. That in Psycho. Right? And so, and I took a lot of showers. I was there for 3 days. I took like 3 showers a day, man. I was shriveled up.
I would be too.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I remember when we were in Belgium, we were waiting to get a ferry to go back to, I think it was.
It's ferry.
Ferry.
I know you're from Baltimore. You said ferry.
Yeah. How do you say it?
It's ferry. F-E-R-R-Y.
Say Ferris wheel.
Ferris wheel. What do you say? Ferris wheel?
Yeah, Ferris wheel.
What do you call this part of your face?
a forehead. What do you say?
Farhead. I say
you
it
do
wrong.
Say far?
I don't know why I say okay. Farhead, but I also, me and Kreischer, for some reason, both say, what's the word we both say wrong? Maybe it's farhead.
It's definitely farhead. That's on the list.
Yeah.
Fairy.
Anyway.
I used to say Sigourney Weaver.
Did you really?
Yeah, until somebody's like, it's Sigourney. Jesus. I was like, but wait, you don't say Journey, you say Journey.
Yeah. Oh, Nightmare. Me and Bert say Nightmare.
He said that yeah. on here. Yeah, yeah, it was a nightmare.
I don't know why I say it that way. So anyway, so I save up all this money.
Yes.
I go to Europe. I come back. And while I was gone, and I had no plans of going to college. I was a D student in high school. And so my father took it upon himself to apply to Boston University. And I get home and he goes, congratulations. I said, what? He goes, you got into BU. I go, I didn't apply to BU. He goes, congratulations. And so I realized he wrote the essay.
He did it?
He wrote the essay about my trip to Europe based on the postcards I was sending him from the road. And so I get in and I show up to college and I'd never been in the city before. I literally showed up. My mom brought me up my first day of school and like not a day early, like the night before class was starting, I show up. 250,000 kids show up to Boston for college every fall.
That's insane.
Yeah, 250,000. So I show up and I'm like, this is fucking heaven. I mean, Boston's a beautiful city. You just see U-Hauls with hot chicks and denim shorts loading fuck. And I got my father's army duffel bag. That's all I got stuff. That's it. And I go into my dorm room and I check in. And I look at the door next to me, next to my dorm, and it says Chris Greenleaf. And I go, wow, that's fucking weird because I grew up, we lived in Cherry Hill, New Jersey when I was like
I remember
five
Cherry
and
Hill.
6 years
that was
old.
That's rough Jersey.
Was it?
Back when we went there.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I think we lived in the nice part of the shitty town.
Probably.
And so my next door neighbor and best friend for those 2 years was a kid named Chris Greenleaf, and he had jet blonde hair. And so I fucking just knock on the door, door opens. Kid with jet blonde hair down to here. He's a surfer. I go, Chris Greenleaf? He goes, yeah. I go, Greg Fitzsimmons. He goes, get the fuck out of here.
What are the odds of that?
So we start snorting crank that night. We stayed up all night snorting crank.
Real?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was like and we just bonded.
The
first night. We stayed up all night. And he knew this other kid from the other dorm. So we all hung out. So anyway, the first week of school, so like that following weekend, we were out and I come back to the dorms and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm drunk. And as I come up the stairs, I see this girl and she's being helped by two other girls and she's crying hysterically. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? And they said she just got sexually assaulted.
Whoa.
And I was like, fuck. And I got a sister and I was like, my blood got boiling. And I was with another guy named Jeff Brown. And we go, what did he look like? Where is he? And they said, he's got on a, just say like Mississippi prep school. He had something very specific on his sweatshirt. His blue sweatshirt, big guy. And I said, all right, let's go find him. So so me and Jeff split up. BU is basically one avenue. It's one avenue in Boston. And so he goes left and I go right. And I go running up the street and I see a kid in a sweatshirt. It says Mississippi prep school on it. And I go, hey. I go, they want to talk to you back at the dorm. And he's like, what are you talking about? I go, you just molested somebody. You're coming back to the dorm. So the guy pushes me. He's with another guy and they're fucking huge. It turns out later they're on the football team. So I'm on the ground. I pick up a very fine fruit punch bottle and I smash it and I chase after them. And they run into the dorms. But the dorm that they're running into is like, it's got you have to be buzzed in by the security guard. And the security guard is behind plexiglass. And so I enter as they enter, and they're showing their IDs, and I go, don't let them in. I go, this guy just attacked somebody at the dorm. Call campus security. Call the police. And the guy comes at me, and I'm holding the fucking bottle, and I'm drunk. And I'm a fucking lunatic, but I got the bottle up, and yeah. I'm holding two football players with a very fine fruit punch bottle. They call the cops, and it takes a while. They're like trying to negotiate with me.
You switch your hands and shit. Like, oh, fuck.
They're coming at me. I'm going like that. And so the cops show up. The cops show up and they look at me like, who is this lunatic? I go, this guy. So anyway, they get them, they get their statements, they get their ID, blah, blah, blah. Turns out the girl who it happened to, Carol, she decided she was a freshman, first week of school. She didn't want to press charges. She wanted to just go away. She wanted to enjoy her freshman year and not deal with it, which whatever. So then I get charges pressed against me for assault with a deadly weapon by
the
two guys.
Fine juice bottle.
Because of a very fine juice bottle. So I get a letter sent.
You need to get them to sponsor your podcast, dude.
Very fine when you're in a pinch. Two guys bigger than you? Not when you got very fine.
That is great.
And so,
They're pressing charges?
So they're pressing charges. My parents get a letter from the dean of the school and from the head of the dorm saying, I'm losing my campus housing. I'm getting thrown out of campus housing. And I might be thrown out of school. And they have a hearing. And so...
And what are the charges? Like, what are you facing? Is it real jail time or is this just a college thing?
It's assault with a deadly weapon.
It's real shit.
Yeah.
So what are you facing? Like, how many years do you get for this shit?
I don't know. But I know that at the preliminary hearing, Carol showed up and she sat there and she said, and I talked to her about it. I said, if they don't drop the charges against him, I'm pressing charges for assault. And they dropped the charges, and we were
good.
And
she let it all go.
And I became good friends with her.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Nice.
In college, yeah.
Good for Carol.
First week, yeah.
What a traumatic experience, and then for her to have to in there and put herself on the fucking line.
I know,
she
did that for me, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And your friend Lee with her, or became friends
with
her?
Yeah, and then Jeff Brown, the other guy who I'm still in touch with to this day, and I had met him that night. We kind of bonded over it, though.
Did you crank with him, too? You're like, come on, Carol, I got the answer to your problem.
I guess I should have said the other kid's name if I'm talking about doing crank, but whatever.
I mean, okay, I want to hear about this because you and I share a common friend, Vicky, and I met her at Oprah.
And Vicky Ernst?
Yep. Yeah, and she met you at Ellen.
Yeah.
Right? And I met her at Oprah. And right away, I know you, when you meet her, she's one of those you just click with right away. You're like, of course you like her.
She lived with us.
Oh, really?
We have a little studio apartment in our guest house in the back, and she lived there for like 2 years.
She's the best.
She's the greatest.
I mean, I could sit and talk sports with her, like, but really talk sports with her.
Like,
just cover two DDs, motherfuckers are running. I was like,
oh, that's awesome.
Okay, so you worked at Ellen, and you know, we hear all these fucking stories about how horrible and everything. What can you tell us? Because it's on your list, so obviously it's a low light, some of it.
I have to dance around certain things because I am under a non-disclosure agreement, but I mean, I think there's certain things that I can talk about because they're not defamatory to the show, but which I would never be.
Mm-mm.
So I get hired at the show as a writer, and you got to remember something, like, Ellen DeGeneres is one of the best comics to ever do it.
Yep.
And I was a huge fan of hers when she was just a road comic. And then
doing
obviously—
VH1's half hour comedy hour. I remember seeing her doing the smoking.
Yeah.
Killing it.
And I was like, so I heard that she was, I talked to Karen Kilgariff, who was, hired as the head writer for the show.
One of my faves.
And so Karen tells me about the job.
Can I ask you, did you have to submit a packet or what did you have to submit for a show like Ellen? And was Ellen already going when you did, or was this a new thing coming?
They had just developed it, and okay. I was brought on for like 3 months before it started to help come up with what the show would be. And, but no, I think... the executive producer, Mary Connolly, I knew because she had booked me on Letterman. She'd booked me on Kilborn. She used to be an executive producer on other late night talk shows. So I knew her. So I was in there. And then Karen, obviously, we were good friends. And she was the one who suggested I go for the job. And so I think I did write. So yeah, I did. I wrote some monologue jokes for her. And she responded to them. And so I got hired. So I come in. I'm a writer producer, and then we're doing test shows. So we bring in audiences, you know, before the air date to try out segments and try some monologues.
With Ellen?
With Ellen.
Okay.
We did test shows. And so at the time, they were looking for an audience warm-up person, and they couldn't find anybody that Ellen liked. You should look at stacks of tapes of guys that were the best warm-up. I don't like him. I don't like him. So then during the test shows, Ellen said, Greg, warm up the audience. So I went out. I just did my stand-up. And I did some crowd work, whatever. And so as we get closer to the start date, the executive producer comes to my office and she goes, Ellen wants you to be the warm-up guy. And I go, I'm not doing fucking warm-up on a daytime talk show.
Plus writing and producing,
right,
which is my main job.
And she goes, well, here's what it pays. And it was like significant money. It was
extra?
On top of my salary, I was going to get a whole other salary for literally walking out for 5 minutes. All you got to do is 5 minutes, stand-up. Bring her out and you're done.
Oh, you're not coming out the whole entire time.
During the commercials, they just played music and the audience would dance.
Because everybody loved to dance there.
Right. So it was the easiest job in the world for a ton of money. And so I was like, all right, I'll do it. So I go out there.
And real quick, was this 5 days a week?
We taped five shows in 4 days. Fridays was a production day. And so the first week I go out there and it's easy. It's basically warmed down because her fans are so insane.
Yeah.
You got to go, hey, everybody, keep your shit together. Okay? She's just a person. Relax.
Yeah, it's like that.
Normally you're going like, come on, everybody, get up on your feet.
Yeah.
And it's the easiest job in the world. And I would crush. I would do my like, you know, cleanest jokes. I would crush. And then I would sit in the front row and I had cue cards and I had a magic marker and I would on the fly, I would write jokes for her and I'd hold them up and she'd do them. And so it was fun. And, but the first week, I went out and I said to the crowd, and I'm trying to figure out what warm-up is. What else can I do?
You'd never done that before.
I'd never done it. And I go, all right, you guys, let's do the wave. You guys want to do the wave? I said, yeah, all right. I said, okay, whenever I say banana, you guys do the wave. And so I start talking, I go, banana, and they do the wave. And meanwhile, I'm friends with Eric Lederman and a bunch of guys that are standing on the side of the stage, doubled over at what a corny hack I am. And so the show starts. Ellen comes out to do the monologue. I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm sitting like not like 15 feet from her, right in front of her. And she comes out, and she starts the monologue, and then she goes, so I made a smoothie, and I put a banana in. And I completely forgot that we had the word banana in the monologue.
Yeah. Did they do it?
The crowd stood up and did the wave. This is the first week of the show. Ellen is still nervous. She doesn't. And all of a sudden, do the wave. She goes like, whoa. She goes, what just happened? What just happened? I go, you guys just did the wave. That's funny. That's weird. Why'd you do the wave? Okay. Anyway, so I made a smoothie. And so I peeled a banana. They do the wave again. And she goes, okay, I don't know what's going on, but if you guys could stop doing the wave. And I'm sitting there going like, holy fuck, I'm
fucked. And
does
the entire audience think this is a bit at this point?
Yeah. No, they're in on it. They think Ellen's in on it. They think that this is all the plan. The warm-up guys set up Ellen so that she could do this. And so it happens one more time, and then she just goes, all right, stop. Stop taping. Stop the show. What's going on? And so I have to go up on stage and go, Ellen, I kind of fucked up. And I told him to do the wave. And she was not happy. She's not happy. Yeah.
I would have laughed at that, though. I'd have been like, for real, you fucking did this?
I think if it had happened maybe a month into the show, but it was like the first week. And
chaos.
So I got to my desk the next morning. I showed up for work and there was a pile of bananas my friends had put on the desk. But I can't speak about those days as much as I'd like to. I try to not get sued.
Yeah. How long were you there?
I was there the first 2 years.
2 years.
Won 4 Emmys.
Did you? Congrats, dude.
2 for producing and 2 for writing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How's that helped you in your career? Has it helped?
I think a daytime Emmy, I think 4 of them equals half of a nighttime Emmy.
4. That's a lot. God damn.
Nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares.
Saying. Nobody cares.
No.
That's cool. You got a trophy? That's
yeah.
Cool.
And they look good. I gave my mom one and she loves it. Yeah. And then the other ones are like tucked away in my office.
I got the YouTube plaque on our wall over here. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares about these
What's
things.
The YouTube plaque?
When you hit 100,000 subscribers, they send you a plaque.
No.
Yeah. And then the next one's at 1 million, they send you another plaque.
No shit.
Or maybe there's a 500,000, I'm not sure. But yeah, they send you a plaque that you pay for.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's free, dude.
Yeah.
All the money they made off you, and they're like, you gotta pay for that plaque.
Right. Yeah. That hardware is nice though when you get older.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm saying.
On the mantle.
Yeah. Go back to some of the jobs you had before comedy. What's some of the worst shit you ever did?
I did it. We had me and my brother started a business. We lived in Newport, Rhode Island. You ever been to Newport?
I've been to Rhode Island.
Yeah, Newport's a fancy ass town. It's okay. All the biggest mansions. They were all built during the Gilded Age, you know, like the Astors, and they had all these, like, literally they look like museums. They're gigantic. And they're on the most breathtaking stretch of rocky coast. And it's amazing. And so we go out there, me and my brother are going out there, and we're living in a house with 11 other people. It's a converted horse barn.
Are you family or is this all friends? Or
it's just me and my brother and then my buddy Chris and then a couple friends from college and then a couple of their friends. And
God.
So we're staying in this house and me and my brother decide because we had met a guy. We lived in the Hamptons the summer before and we were bussing tables and shit.
Never been there either. I really want to go
there. Yeah, Hamptons is nice. And so we go out and we knew this guy and he was running his own business. And so we learned from him. We just basically talked to him a lot. We go, we're going to do that next summer. And so the business model is you go to all the real estate places and you say, we are going to do any odd job anybody needs done. Landscaping, babysitting, house cleaning, ride to the airport. Fucking driveway ceiling, whatever you need done, pool cleaning, we do it. We don't do any of it. But we tell them, me and my brother show up, we put on suit and tie, and we walk into every real estate place in Newport. We got these nice color brochures we made up, and we hand them out, and everybody's very impressed. And it's also one of those places where it's so expensive to live there that it's actually hard to find people to do menial jobs.
Yeah, and I know that people with money love to pay for shit that's convenient for them.
Right.
And save them. Their time is valuable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we start, our start, phone starts ringing off the hook and we're getting jobs and we've got everybody in the house.
That's a great idea.
They're all working for us. And the idea is we're charging $20 an hour and we're going to pay our friends $15 an hour and we're going to keep the $5 and just answer phones all day. And so we start sending them out and of course they're all fucking hungover. People are showing up late. People don't want to die. I'm not mowing a lawn. I mow a lawn. Yeah, you said you'd fucking, I'm not mowing 15. Why are you getting 20 and I'm getting 15? Yeah. Well, because we were the ones that said, nah, that's not fair. I should get 20. Well, how are you getting, it's like all of that all day. And it turns into me and my brother doing the jobs. It turns into just us.
You did do it?
We did all the shit. And we didn't have no idea what we were doing. This one guy, Mr. Schindelman, he owned a condo complex. And it was like a bunch of little bungalows around a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. And he charged premium money because there was a pool. So he hired my brother to open up the pool. And when you, I don't know if you know about pool maintenance, but you got to shock a pool.
Yeah, I was a lifeguard. It. Yeah, and pH, everything's got to be balanced. Yeah,
and we show up and there's algae on the pool and the pump doesn't work and everything's fucked up. So my brother says, I can take care of it. And we're charging him. And my brother, like, can't figure it out the first week, can't figure it out the second week. Memorial Day comes and goes. Tenants are complaining. By July, the pool still has algae on it. There's a rent strike. Schindelman sues us.
Nah.
He sues us because he's been paying us. Sued. So now we got a lawsuit. We're dodging this guy. I do a driveway sealing job, which I don't know if you've sealed a driveway, but you get this like tar and you pour. So we went to this hardware store and we bought some of the tar. And I didn't read the directions. I just got a broom and I fucking swept it, made it black. I leave, I get paid. 2 days later, it rains. And I was supposed to, something I didn't do right. the rain washed all the tar into this like $10,000 Japanese garden, killed all the flowers.
No, it did not.
Yeah, destroyed the driveway, looked like shit. She's suing us. And then meanwhile, meanwhile, like, there's this one girl, we got this other woman, and we're cleaning her house, and she's a divorcee, and she's newly divorced, and she's got this apartment, and she wants us to clean it. And so me and my brother don't want to clean it, so we say, all right, we'll switch. Every other week, each guy will clean the apartment. And I would show up, and I'd be like, man, this woman's a fucking pig. This place looks like it hasn't been cleaned in 2 weeks. And so I start going, like, what the fuck is going on? And then I find out my brother's showing up, and he's banging her. And he's not cleaning.
Nuh-uh.
He's just having sex with her. He's getting paid. He's getting paid to have sex with her.
He's cleaning her pipes, bro.
And I'm doing 2 weeks worth of cleaning.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm flirting with her. I had no idea. So I'm kind of flirting with her. But he had
game. Did she know you were brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she did.
Oh, yeah. But he had game. I didn't have the game.
That is hilarious.
And then so we had a 76 Velare station wagon. Plymouth Velare.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. And so whenever we parked the car, we would have to open up the doors, me, him, and my friend, and we would kick it backwards to get out of parking spots. Yeah. And so we left.
You're Flintstoning it to get it backwards.
Fitzsimmons. Meet the Fitzsimmons.
That is hilarious. Using your feet to get out.
And the company was called Sure Thing Home Services.
You're pushing out of a parking space. A Sure Thing over here.
Picking up girls. All right, ladies, open your door. You got to earn this one.
Yeah, high heels on. Oh, shit.
So we left town and at the end of the summer, we packed our shit and we left in the middle of the night.
And no lawsuits ever hit you?
We went back to college. We forgot about it.
Dude, that is fucking $10,000 Japanese garden. Like, it had to be the worst shit.
Toxic. Whatever I used was toxic.
Oh, man. What was your very first job ever?
I used to caddy when I was like, I was probably like 12. And I would, I weighed like less than 100 pounds. And I go out there, they give me one bag. But this is in the 80s when people had those Rodney Dangerfield bags.
Yeah, with
those
big Dodge Ram van, the radio, got a beer tap.
But these guys would fucking, they'd have an umbrella. They would have like 30 extra balls. They had like, wait, you're supposed to have 14 clubs. These guys have like 17 clubs in there, a rain jacket, an extra pair of shoes. And the golf course that I worked at, it was like the hilliest fucking, it was, and if you, I looked it up online, the average golf course, if you walk it, is about 7 miles. So I'd be out there.
Funny you say golf. Yeah.
Say like Baltimore, right?
I say golf.
Oh, you say golf.
Yeah, like the Gulf of Mexico. Do you say Gulf of Mexico?
Gulf of Mexico.
So you say it again?
Well, Gulf of Mexico is spelled G-U-L.
Yeah, I say it the same way as what I'm saying. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, golf and golf. Gulf of Mexico, I'm going to go golf. I don't change it.
So, and I worked my way up to two bags, and I used to get, I can't believe this shit. I used to get up at like 6:30 in the morning. I'd get on my 10-speed bike, and it was about a 7-mile ride to the golf course.
One way?
One way was 7 miles. I'd get there. I would carry a bag and then eventually two bags for 7 fucking miles. Some days I would do 2 loops and then I'd get back on that bike and I'd ride it back home again.
All right,
and
so then I do this math in my head. If you did 2 loops, that would be 14 miles,
14
right?
miles with
plus
bags.
Plus a 7 ride and 7 bags, so 28 miles?
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God,
and hilly.
Damn, yeah, and hilly. Yeah. And you're biking and walking.
Yep.
Fuck,
and then
dude.
I go drinking all night.
Well, you're probably in the best shape of your life.
Isn't it amazing when you were young, the energy that you had?
Yeah.
I could go out. I could sleep, 5 hours and go do it again.
I don't want to do that with a cart.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I didn't want to drive with it.
Yeah. And we would go, and I'd ride my bike, and I'd stop at Twin Donuts on the way, and I'd get a ham and egg sandwich on a roll, and all the caddies would sit in the yard, and they'd bust each other. There's all these kids from Yonkers. These, like, tough Irish Catholic kids from Yonkers. And they were the funniest motherfuckers I've ever met. And it was this one kid, his name was Bob Kalacki. And they called him Killer Kalacki because he had his head shaved and he was trying to get in the Marines. But he kept getting rejected because he was too intense. He was too intense for the Marines.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah, yeah. This guy would be like climbing fucking trees while he was out there. And there was, I think he had a record. I think he had some kind of a record. And there was another guy named One Arm Willie who was a one-arm caddy. Who was
he's
like,
a one-arm caddy?
Yeah, and he looked like he was in his 80s. He was old. They'd send him out with one bag, one arm. But the members loved him because he could read putts and he knew the course. PGA Jack, there was a rumor that he lived in his car and there was rumors that he'd killed people. And he lived in the fucking parking lot of the country club. He slept in his car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smelled like shit.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. And then the caddy master, Bobby Orman, he would do this thing when the fall came and you were caddying in the fall. He had the betting slips for the NFL. And so if you bought a ticket, then you got a good loop. If you bought five tickets, you got a really good loop. Mm-hmm. If you didn't buy any tickets, you didn't get out that
yeah.
day.
At all.
Yeah.
Oh, right. He wouldn't even send you out.
No. Now so there was always more caddies than there were loops.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of ass kissing that went on. There was a lot of politics that went on.
This is great, dude. Look, we're there already. I can't believe we're there already. We got to get you out of here. I got to get out of here. But thank you for doing this.
This is a pleasure, man.
Anytime, brother.
And it's good seeing you around the store now. I'm so congratulations on passing
thank you,
in.
Man. Thank you. I
doing some spots.
It. Everybody's been super kind about it. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Well, it's
mostly people just don't even give a shit. But so many, it's a different camaraderie there.
No, it's a club. Like. I mean, it's a club, and you're in it, and you should have been in it a long time ago. But the truth is, like, when guys like you are working the club, it's better for everybody. You know,
that's
because
nice
the lineups are stronger and the crowds get hotter, and you know, it's great.
Yeah, it's been coming back. It feels good in there lately.
Yeah.
Plug everything again, please.
All right. I'm going to be on the road. Go to fitzdog.com to get tickets. I'm going to be coming to, where am I? La Jolla and Spokane and New Orleans, Lafayette, Denver Comedy Works, my second favorite club in the country.
What's your first?
I never say.
All right. Tell me later.
I never say because if I say Tacoma, if I say, then people, the other club owners, like, hey, what the fuck?
Right.
Yeah. But this is my second favorite podcast.
I'll take it, brother. I'll take it. As always, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to you all next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.